Town Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Yes, yes, yes. We are back. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. And we are joined on the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline, where all guests and callers join us. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop, by DeMichael Cole, Grizzlies beat writer and co-host of Locked On Grizzlies. DeMichael, thank you for taking so much time to join us for our last show of 2023.
Hey, I'm a privilege. So y'all brought me on the last show of the year. That make me feel like I'm somebody important.
But, That's right. Well, look, you were popping on social media when everything went down with Ja a couple days ago, and you do some great work. So we'll get into all that, and we wanted to get to hear more from you. But before we get into all that, going on the court, how would you describe the Grizzlies season so far? I mean, they look like the Pistons to start. You get Ja Morant back and you can't lose a game. We know he didn't play last night, and you lose to the Nuggets. But besides that, you have been rolling. How would you describe the Grizzlies season so far?
It's funny because you're saying the Grizzlies season, but around here they're calling the Grizzlies seasons. You know what it is? It feels like two different seasons in one, right? There's the first season that's pre-Ja, and then there's the second season. You know, when I was talking to a lot of the players, remember when Ja came back, it was the second night of a back-to-back, and we were out in Oklahoma. And I'm in the locker room with the guys, and they're like, "It's about to feel like a new season." Like that was kind of the theme. You know, wow. This is an entire different season, you know, and it's kind of what they were taking on. Now the coaches, you know, Taylor Jenkins, you know, he's a coach, so he doesn't have that mentality. You know, he feels like those 25 games were critical in preparing them for that stretch. But for the players, it was more so like renewed energy. And Ja Morant, like, because, you know, people look at it from the outside and they say, man, how does one player make a team so much drastically better? You're talking about a team that's 6-20 without him and 4-0 with him. But it's not that simple. It's basically the best way I can describe it, guys, is he's a connector for this team. Without him, you have a bunch of guys who are playing out of position in different positions. You know, I watched the Kings a decent amount. So if I would go back to the Kings last year, it's like if you have, you know, De'Aaron Fox out for a game and then all of a sudden, you know, Malik Monk steps in to the starting lineup and he becomes your number one option. And Keegan Murray, instead of most of his shots, you know, his rookie year being spot up 3-point shots and things like that, now he has to be more creative as a scorer and things like that because someone has to pick up the load. And that's kind of what's happened in Memphis. You know, Desmond Bane, you know, basically has become a de facto point guard while Ja Morant was out. Jaren Jackson Jr. is amongst, you know, has kind of developed into one of the best isolation scorers in the league. And it's happened because that's how he's had to play. So when Ja gets back, it's kind of like now everyone's settled back into the ideal roles. You know, now Dez can be kind of a secondary playmaker. You know, Jaren can be a third option offensively. All these other guys who had to dribble and create shots for themselves can now just spot up, take easy looks. And, of course, they push the tempo and they get easier looks in transition because of it.
Now that Ja's back, I mean, yeah, you guys sit at 10-20 right now. What's like the hope or the goal for the Grizzlies this year? I mean, you definitely put yourself behind the eight ball, but is there play-in hopes? I mean, playoff hopes? Is it just kind of try and recoup the season the best you can? What's really the hope out there for the Grizzlies this year?
Oh, they think they can do the thing, man. They think that, you know, playoffs and play-in are our hopes. Now, from a realistic perspective, people, like, right now, they're 10-20. A lot of people have thrown out the number, you know, for the rest of the way, they'd have to go 31-21 to get to 40-41. If you look at the past couple years, you know, when you talk about that 9 seed, 8 seed, 10 seed range, 41 wins has typically been kind of a good barometer to get you there. And the Grizzlies basically, you know, if you go back to the win percentages from the last 2 years, when they won 56 games a couple years ago, when they won 51 games last season, if they play at a comparable, you know, win pace, then that would put them in position for a play-in or a playoff spot. And considering that they won their first game, 4 games without Ja, now they've won 4 out of 5, they are on that type of track. But as we know, as you guys know, the Western Conference is so tough, there's no let-up. Like, you win your first 4 games, it's like, okay, no sweat. Now you got to go to Denver, and now you got to go to the Clippers. And then when you get back home, you got to take on the Kings. So it's like, it's no let-up. But I'll say this. They still feel like if they get in that play in, you know, anything can happen. Remember, this is a Grizzlies team. It was only 3 years ago where Steph Curry and this was the year Thompson was out. Remember, the Warriors kind of started getting something going with Steph Curry, Poole, Draymond Green, and they met the Grizzlies in the play in, and no one gave the Grizzlies a chance that year. No one thought that they'd beat them. And Ja Morant, I think, had 36 points, made the game winner, and they ended up playing the Utah Jazz, the number one seed in the first round that year.
Talking to DeMichael Cole, Grizzlies beat writer, co-host of Locked On Grizzlies. All right, DeMichael, we got to talk about it because it was such a big story. And you were a bit in the middle of it with DMs from national analysts and things like that. When it comes to the Ja Morant dance controversy, where do you think the misunderstanding was? Some people saying that, well, if there were gun celebrations in the dance and he shouldn't have done it. Where do you think that misunderstanding was? And how do you think Ja should, I guess, I don't want to use the word behave, but how should Ja kind of go about things moving forward, as a lot of us here are trying to be our authentic selves, but not to a fault?
Yeah. I mean, you just summed it up at the end perfectly. That's kind of the battle with Ja right now. And quite frankly, from talking to him, everything that I sense is Ja wants to be Ja. He always says it, whether he's talking about it on the court, whether he's talking about off the floor, he always says, I just have to be Ja. Mm-hmm. So you get the sense that he's not going to lose track of who he is, you know, in this process, because that's been the concern for a lot of people, right? They're like, man, you know, like if you think about it, like it's like the league or fans, like they want him to act like, you know, some like Ivy League rogue scholar type kid or something. And that's just never been Ja Morant.
Yeah.
Right. Not, like you're trying to make him something that he's not. And that's going to have a, you know, impact on his mental and all that stuff. But here's the other side of getting back to your point with the dance. I do think, like, when you break the dance down and you look at the dance, like he did it in New Orleans, which should have been the first thing that people, you know, paid attention to. Like, it was kind of one of those, you're going to a city, you know, it's like if you do, you know, you go to Atlanta and you do an, you know, Atlanta dance, or you go to LA and you do, you know, a SoCal dance, or whatever the case may be. You go to Northern California, you do, you know, one of those Bay Area dances or something like that. Like, that's kind of what it was. I will say this, though. There is a part of me that thinks, like, yeah, Ja has to understand, like, because of the position that he's kind of put himself in, that, you know, when he does certain things, it's going to be ridiculed a little bit. Now, if he's willing to deal with that or not, then, you know, that's up to him. Because at the end of the day, you can explain yourself and kind of clear yourself of the situation. But still, when you put yourself in a position where, you know, he's doing the hand gestures and it looks like, you know, he's doing, you know, like holding, you know, doing like gun triggers, like with his hand. But at the same time, you know, it's a popular New Orleans dance. Like, it's popular on TikTok. So I knew it in the moment what he was doing. And actually, guys, when I saw it, I didn't think that it was going to blow up, because at first I just saw, like, you know, it was kind of those X pages or Twitter pages that just troll account.
Right.
So they're like, Ja's, you know, doing it. And I'm just like, ah, this will blow over. And then I wake up in the morning and I see, you know, New York Post. I see, you know, like national publications are talking about it. TMZ said apparent gun. And I was like, oh boy, I'm going to have to write about this. Ain't
yeah.
I? I tell you what, though, it's basically this thing where Ja has to find that middle ground, right? Because he wants to be himself. Like, this is who Ja has always been. He's always been kind of, you know, a big personality. He likes to dance. He likes to, you know, talk trash on the court, talk a little trash, you know, in the media about what's happening on the court. But it's just certain ways about how his messages will be conveyed, you know, that he has to be mindful of because of that position that he's put himself in.
All right, DeMichael Cole, Grizzlies beat writer, co-host of Locked On Grizzlies. One more, DeMichael. One more quick one before I let you go. This might be the hardest one. Look, man, two star point guards going up against each other. Who is more impactful? You can use more impactful. Who is better, whatever you want to call it? You're starting a franchise right now. De'Aaron Fox or Ja Morant?
Man, you tricked me when you said to start a franchise right now, because if I'm starting a franchise right now, I'd say Ja, because, you know, he's a little bit younger.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's more room to grow in his game, where when I watch De'Aaron Fox, he's so polished.
Like, he's a better player right now. Like, I love watching him because when you look at De'Aaron Fox when he came out of college, it was kind of similar to Ja. It was the speed. It was the athleticism. But when you watch him play now, he barely uses that stuff. Yeah. It's more just getting to his spots on the court. He say, oh, I want to get to the mid-range, you know, on the right side of the bat. He gets to his spot, and he makes his shots. Like, he plays so polished. And I think this is just who he's going to be for the rest of his career. I still don't think we know what Ja is going to be yet. Like, we have an idea that he's just going to be this super explosive point guard. But what's he going to be when, you know, like, is he going to learn, like, that De'Aaron Fox level where he's become this guy who can change paces and just if he wants to play fast, he can beat you that way. He can slow it down. When I watch De'Aaron Fox, I just love to watch, like, how polished his game has become from, you know, his rookie season. So simple answer is, if I'm starting franchise from the ground up, I'm choosing Ja because of, you know, I just think, like, we see it right now with this Grizzlies team. Like, his playmaking, his ability to push the ball in transition, the paint pressure that he puts on teams, like, you have to collapse the paint. You just need decent shooters around him, and you're going to have a lot of success. De'Aaron Fox is the better player right now, though. I don't want to get lost in that point. I do think that Fox is the better player right now. It's a little bit because he's older, but he's just super polished. Like, and then the two-way part of it. Like, I like the fact that a lot of point guards don't guard point guards these days, but De'Aaron Fox, seeing him guard on the ball, it moves me, man. Like, I really like seeing that. It's old school. You know, when he plays the Grizzlies, you see him guard Ja Morant and things like that. And I just love to see, you know, a point guard who's willing to guard Steph Curry, willing to guard Ja Morant, and then go give him buckets on the other end.
There it is, DeMichael Cole, Grizzlies beat writer, co-host of Locked On Grizzlies. DeMichael, thank you very much, and enjoy the game. I know we will on New Year's Eve, and we will definitely have you back on. Look, if the Grizzlies keep doing their thing, we might be having a conversation before the playoffs or during the playoffs.
Yeah, hey man, don't count them out yet. Just keep a little close eye on them in the standings, and we'll see where it goes.
Definitely, definitely. Happy New Year, DeMichael. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Happy New Year, guys. Take care.
Got to get to a break. When we get back, in 2012, a very small number of players averaged over 20 points per game in the NBA. There are currently more than double that. What does that mean? We'll discuss. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Local.
This is Sacktown Sports.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, last show of 2023. And we're going out with a bang. Thank you to DeMichael Cole, Grizzlies beat writer, co-host of Locked On Grizzlies. Great conversation with DeMichael. We will have that posted on YouTube if you missed it, or if you're on YouTube, you can scroll backwards if you want to catch it. And also on the Sacktown Sports app at sacktownsports.com if you want to catch that interview. Great stuff from DeMichael. We will definitely be talking to him again if the Grizzlies continue to do their thing. So we will have that and more from DeMichael Cole and the Grizzlies if they're able to keep it rolling. Something was brought up yesterday that we want to discuss as well as we continue to have this conversation about not necessarily viewership. We did so much of that yesterday, but just where the game is and what any of this means. So in 2012, only 12 players in the NBA averaged over 20 points per game. Currently, there are 41 players right now averaging over 20 points per game.
Can add 42 to that, actually. DeJounte Murray just got onto the list yesterday.
42.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's 30 more. Yeah. Okay. What does it mean, I guess, is the quickest way to figure out what we're doing here. Because I don't know. But I would say, to compare to the king that is the NFL, it's the same thing. Every year, somebody else is breaking total yards this and passing yards that. So to me, they're one and the same.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of view it in the same light. I think all leagues are trying to emphasize offense with their rules, however it may be, whether it be actually on paper or just spiritually telling referees, like, hey, let some things go, or hey, make sure that you definitely call these things. I mean, it feels like the Joel Embiid free throw thing has become a bigger thing this year. I think that could maybe, you know, not just Joel, but I think there are a couple other guys who
get the
benefit. There's
some bad clips out there from Joel.
Yeah, they get the benefit of some beneficial whistles, and that's going to raise scoring. You have, you know, situations like we were just talking about with DeMichael, where, you know, you don't have Ja Morant there, so Desmond Bane's scoring more, Jaren Jackson scoring more. I also just think it's a sign that the NBA is as talented as it's ever been, because looking at the list of those 42 guys who score over 20 points per game, there's like three or four that are puzzling or you might not guess, but for the most part, a lot of the names make sense. I mean, I'm looking at, like, Cam Thomas is surprising just because you look at the other names that surround him. He's not at the level of Paul George, Jaylen Brown, Kyle Kuzma. Let's see here. You might be surprised. I mean, yeah, DeJounte Murray's at 20 points, but even that makes a little sense. Franz Wagner is now up at 20 points. Scottie Barnes, I guess, being at 20 points is a little bit of a shocker, but to me, it's just a sign of how healthy this league is right now.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out what the difference is. Is it just better young talent? What is the difference?
I would say so.
Besides, I guess, no hand.
Yeah.
Because, well, in 2012.
The pace of play.
But in 2012, there was no hand checking.
No, yeah. Correct.
So it's not, this isn't 1992.
Right.
Right? This is 2012. So. Yeah. It's a very similar game to what was being played in 2012. I think it's, number one, it's the three-pointers.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, that's why De'Aaron's at 30 right now.
Right, it's the three-pointers. That's the biggest change to me. And honestly, it's, and not to go Darwin here, but the evolution of these guys, right?
Yeah.
These big men that are the Kevin Durant's that are coming in, that are shooting threes. Even the Brook Lopez's are shooting threes. That was in 2012, that wasn't happening. We're still banging down low. And if you're a big man, you're a big man. I think that's the difference. These guys, to your point with De'Aaron, these guys who were focusing on different things, and even, you know, the Chris Pauls of the world, that we got to, okay, my job is the mid-range, and then we have Pager, whoever, I'm going a little bit too far back here.
Right.
Those are our three-point shooters. Kyle Korver is our three-point shooter. Now everybody has a little bit, and it's almost, you're almost a pariah if you don't.
Yeah.
Right? You also have, I mean, Goran Dragic, we just talked about, not, he's probably playing right now with, you know, if he had a better jump shot and some of these guys, Ricky Rubio, guys like that, who, hey, that wasn't, they got caught in between. I think what's interesting, we got to get to a break. I told Nate we'd hit this one. It's really interesting how certain guys in that middle ground, where that 2012 to now, the game literally changed while they were playing. And as they say, either get with it or get lost. And some guys did, some guys got lost. All right, got to get to a break. When we get back, we have some of the best audio of the year. We also have best game of the year, story of the year. And we already mentioned the biggest L of the year. And at 12 o'clock, Lake Lewis Jr., who is a Commanders insider for ABC News, will join us to talk Niners at Washington. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube.
Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. Couple headlines here. The Kings haven't won a game in Atlanta since November 8th, 2019. Where were you in 2019?
I don't know.
It was a completely different world.
Yeah, like, literally. How am I supposed to know?
Literally.
The fact that it's about to be 2024 is nuts, especially when you think about, how far removed we are from being stuck in our houses for that entire year. It's like,
it was sick.
It both feels like 3 years ago, but also at the same time feels like it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was a wild time.
It was weird.
Can the Kings get back on track? They have not won in Hotlanta.
Do you want to guess the line tonight? Do you guys know it?
I don't know it. If it's just in guess. Atlanta, I'll say Atlanta's really bad. Low key, like, you know, Atlanta doesn't catch a lot of flack, but they're 12-18 for no reason.
I don't want to go more than, I'm going to say that they're not happy with, the odds makers aren't happy with the Kings right now. I'm going to say Kings are favored by 5.5.
Ooh, that's a great number. I would probably have said 5, but I'll say Kings by, man, Atlanta's not good. I'll say Kings by 7.
Wow. Okay. Well, I thought you guys were going to go a different way with that. I think the line's moved a bit, but Kings by 1.
So they've been close. Interesting. They're tricking off games, man.
Inconsistency.
I want to say this morning, Kings were plus 1.5, but the money has moved significantly. What I'm seeing is almost 90% of the bets money line are for the Kings.
Interesting. So. I mean, rightfully so. Again, like the Hawks are garbage, and I know you at the same time you just reel off that the Kings haven't won there in 4 years, but. I don't know. Like, that's not really an environment that I would think is a hostile environment or anything that's tough to really, you know, play in.
Well, to be fair, they probably only play there once a year.
They do. Yes.
So And I believe it's specifically, it's in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So they're 0 for their last 3. That's not as ridiculous. Or 0 for the last 4.
Something I'm trying to look at the injury report to see if maybe there's even something there that's maybe somebody's getting off the injury report that's been on there for a while. I see AJ Griffin and DeAndre Hunter have both been out, which would be good for the Kings because that's really Atlanta's only forward presence. Know.
But that just means that they've lost 3 games to me, right?
Yes, yeah, that just means they've
if
lost 3.
If they even went in 2020, we don't even – did they even go in 2020?
That's a good point, right. That could have been like a – strange loophole in that stat.
So I am not moved by that. I am more moved by the fact that the Kings have lost 3 of their last 4.
Yeah, for sure.
And they have to play a early game, a 4:30 game. I'm more worried about that than the fact they haven't won in Atlanta. Go get some lemon pepper wings and you'll figure it out.
Definitely.
Got a little bit of news here from Jason Dumas, friend of the show, who is on 95.7 Airwaves, and they spoke with Dusty Baker.
Interesting.
Dusty Baker told them he's talked to Larry Bear about a possible role with the Giants and plans to talk to Farhan soon. So there could be obviously retired from
managing,
but Dusty Baker could be joining the Giants organization. I would be thrilled for that. You can take.
It's just a great guy.
Guy. I don't know if his son is still in the league. I know he got drafted out of Cal. So, Dusty Baker, a little bit of news there.
Interesting.
If he ends up rejoining the Giants in whatever capacity, I would be very excited for that. Also excited to get into this game of the year. We have a little bit of sound as well. Some of the games that we have on the list. Chris, you want to go ahead and take us to them?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely more viewed from a Northern California kind of prism, if you will. But I think this one would qualify for, even if you were to do a national game of the year, I think Kings-Clippers definitely deserves to be on every single list that's going to include any sort of best performance or game of the year. And, I mean, it was a 176-175 double overtime, just war. It wasn't even just a battle. It was long enough to be a full-blown war. The Kings force overtime on a sick Malik Monk 3 where he relocates from the corner, and De'Aaron finds him perfectly right in the shooting pocket, goes into overtime. A lot of people say it's the best played basketball game they've seen in their lives. Right. I'm right for it. In 176-175 game, you'd probably assume not a lot of defense was played.
Right.
That's not even true.
Yeah.
They were just a ridiculous level of shot making from everybody involved. I think Malik and De'Aaron both had 40 pieces.
Malik had 45.
Oh, my gosh.
De'Aaron had 42.
Oh, my. And Kawhi Leonard was absolutely insane in that game as well. Just a ridiculous, ridiculous night.
Here we have a highlight from it. Here we go.
Man.
Batum to Plumlee. Knocked away. Fox with a steal. Fox now heads up the floor. 40 seconds to go. Everybody's on their feet here in Southern California. Fox off the dribble. He scores the 15-footer. The Kings have taken the lead. 36 seconds to go. It's 176-175. De'Aaron Fox has 42 points with that hit.
Oh, my gosh.
Kawhi Leonard had 44. G-Man. Always shout out G-Man. Paul George had 34. Norman Powell had 24. What a game.
My goodness.
What a game.
Insane. I don't think we'll ever see a game that even approaches the level of basketball played that night. It was just an incredible night. And there's so many people, I've talked about it before, if I travel at all and mention the job I have or the fact that I'm a Kings fan or whatever, watch the Kings a ton, first thing so many out-of-towners bring up is, dude, last year, the first or only game I watched from the Kings, Kings-Clippers,
right,
best game I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's like it's reached that level where it's just everybody universally knows how crazy that game is, and it was just awesome to watch and came at the perfect time of the year, too. Post All-Star game, it was really a sign of, oh, this Kings team is like real. Mm-hmm. Like there was a lot of question of, are they just going to slide here in the second half of the season? Yeah. No, that game really was symbolic of a lot of things and really catapulted the Kings season into being something legit. Game number two for game of the year. We talked about the first meeting between these two teams, but the part two was definitely the redemption story of the San Francisco 49ers over the Philadelphia Eagles. After stalling out in their first two possessions, what, they scored like six straight touchdown drives or something insane like that?
Yeah.
Go on to win 42-19 after talking just immensely after losing in the NFC Championship game. They backed it up. And not often, I feel like, in sports, especially in these days, do you have a team that talks a lot about, oh, just wait till next time. Wait till, oh, y'all didn't see us the first time. Wait until you actually get us at full strength. And then they actually back it up on the road. Absolutely insane. Here's a sound from that game.
Deebo Samuel is loose. Touchdown, San Francisco, the Deebo dash.
What a play call. Quick perimeter screen out to the left. Quick snap. Deebo's waving bye-bye to this
Philadelphia crowd. Just their touchdown of the game.
Yeah. I was just about to say, was that touchdown number one, two, or three?
Yeah. At this point, do you feel comfortable? And I know Brock has improved from last season, but it was really similar when they were rolling. Do you feel comfortable saying that, and Nate, you can hop in on this too, do you feel comfortable saying that the Niners would have won and if Brock never got hurt? And number two, to take it a step further, do you think the Niners beat the Chiefs? Why not? It's 2023. It's the last show of the year.
I don't feel comfortable saying either one of those.
Okay.
I don't, because I've seen heartbreak in the same situations.
Okay.
I don't. And
good on you.
They're different teams, too. Like, the Eagles are undoubtedly worse roster-wise this year.
Yeah.
Hargrave makes the Niners better this year. Chase Young makes the Niners better this year.
Wow, look at you. What kind of fan
are you?
I'm
not saying
you?
They're going to lose for sure. But I'm saying I'm not like,
because that
they're
was the
going
thing
to win.
Everybody said after they beat the brakes off the Eagles, well, they definitely would have won last season. That was the idea. But good on you, Nate.
I'm a double no there. Yeah, I don't think you can confidently say that they would have beaten the Eagles. And there's no way of saying, I mean, the Eagles put together as good of a performance as you really could have in that Super Bowl. And even still,
you think the Niners could have done it, though, Chris?
There's a world where they could have, but I would not have.
So
I would not have said,
and the Niners are much.
Okay. I would not have
the Niners
said
are better this
happened,
year,
though.
So it's not fair.
Yeah,
I'd say like 20% better, which is pretty significant.
Chase Young as well, and Chase Young's return.
The O line's playing better, even though they're all in the infirmary right now.
Yeah,
so, I mean, and the competition's a lot worse. Like the Chiefs are a lot worse. I mean, from head to toe, I don't think that there's a team in the NFL besides the Niners that's as good as the Chiefs or Eagles were last year.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
No, that's a good point.
Next one
is another Kings game. This one is going to live in infamy, at least in my heart, for a really long time. Game one of the NBA first round of the playoffs, the Sacramento Kings take on the Golden State Warriors in what was an incredibly emotional night for the fans that have been, or that had been, I should say, that's nice to say, had been waiting 16 years for a Kings playoff game. It was everything anyone would want it to be and more. I remember going into that game saying, you know, like, I'm really just in it for the pregame intros, and anything that happens after that is whatever. That happens. I asked so long just for this day to be a thing. I can't be upset at anything that happens besides it just being a thing that happened. And then the Kings actually won the game. Yeah. Steph misses a potential game-tying opportunity at the buzzer. Pandemonium ensues, to quote G-Man. Incredible. I mean, from the atmosphere, from fans giving them a standing ovation with 15 minutes still until the game even started. The energy was ridiculous from tip until the final whistle. I just don't know if I'm ever going to feel an environment that was even close to that. And here's just a little taste of how it sounded at the end.
You couldn't ask for more drama in the opening playoff game. Inbounds pass to Curry. He turns, he wheels, he fires, he misses. Barnes with a rebound, and Sacramento has won game number one. After 17 years without a playoff experience, they have risen to the occasion. They were down by 10, not once, but twice in the third quarter, and they battled their way back. They took a one-point lead into the fourth. They opened up a six-point advantage at 122 to 116. They hung on as the Warriors fought their way back, and Sacramento gets the victory. The final score is 126 to 123. And let me tell you, if you can't sense it, if you can't feel it through the radio, this place is absolutely nuts.
Booming. It was absolutely booming. Shout out G-Man, who just absolutely perfectly encapsulated that game in that moment. And then real quick before we have to go to break, no sound here, and we're going to reveal all the winners in our final segment when we do our Dog of the Year segment at the end of the show, so definitely stay tuned for that. But of course, had to throw this one in there. I don't know if it quite fits the tone of the other games, but maybe it's a little bit of recency bias, but to me, Keegan Murray's 47-point night the other day, the 11 straight threes, 12 threes made in the game, a franchise record. Just an incredible night. I got to be there as a fan, which was a whole different experience. I can't imagine if everybody gets to experience something like that. Man, it was something special. And here's just a little bit of how Keegan's historic night sounded.
Here's Sabonis looking for a seam. Gives to Keegan. Heat check. Three on the way. He's got a new career scoring high. He's also got a career high in triples made in a game. It's his ninth. And after a 13-point second quarter, he's got 14 in the third. Crowd still buzzing. Keegan, quick catch, quick strike. There's another one up in the lights and in the well. 10 three-pointers made. Keegan Murray putting on an all-time scoring exhibition tonight. Has 36 points for Sacramento. Now over on the wing to Keegan. Keegan steps back. He just knocked down his 12th three-pointer, a Kings franchise record. He's got 45 points. Here's a desperate heave from midcourt by Talen Horton-Tucker that's off target, and the third quarter comes to conclusion with Keegan Murray having scored 26 points in the last 12 minutes. He had 13 in the previous quarter. He has 45 in the game. That's the most prolific scoring night by any King this season. And he's now 12 of 13 from downtown. And he's within two of the NBA's all-time three-point record. Inside 3 minutes to go. Give and go. Run to the rack. Keegan scores it. I thought he was on the bench. He's up to 47. Didn't mean to short you, number 13. So he is now equaled Mitch Richmond among the Sac era highest scoring games at 47 points.
Wow. How about that? Absolute chills. Keegan Murray, 47-point night, 12 threes on the night, an absolutely incredible performance, an incredible night to be in the building. Very rarely, if ever, have I seen somebody just get that hot in Golden 1 Center. It was great to have it be Keegan and hear those chants rain throughout the arena. Like I said, we're going to give our winners for all these categories at the final segment right before Crosstalk today. So definitely stay tuned for that.
Got to get to a break when we get back. Best audio of the year, and at 12 o'clock, Lake Lewis Jr., Commanders Insider for ABC News. And we do have a injury update on somebody very important on the Commanders.
Oh, no.
We will get to that when we get back. And more Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. We have news from Adam Schefter. This broke about an hour-ish ago. Commanders Jacoby Brissett is being added to the injury report due to hamstring tightness and will be listed as questionable for Sunday's game versus the 49ers. If he can't start, Sam Howell, who the Commanders recently benched, would.
Mm. That sounds like a tough situation.
Awkward.
Yeah, that's it's a little bit weird. What do you think happened? Like between
That's what I'm saying.
Between the time Jacoby, that Jacoby
what were
got
you
made,
doing?
Yeah. Is this like a practice? Like did he maybe pull a hammy in practice
I
or something?
No
like
clue. I have no clue at all.
It's not great.
I mean, the Niners, and we could look up the line, the spread on that game,
right?
Because, I mean, the Niners, there's just no excuse.
No.
And we're going to talk to Blake Lewis Jr. here in about 10 minutes, who is a Commanders insider and does good work for ABC News. And, I mean, the Commanders are third right now in the draft order.
Yeah, that's crazy. You told me that this morning, and I was like, there's no way.
They have four wins. They got four wins.
I didn't realize.
The Sam Howell experiment. Hey, that's the thing. That I don't really mind what the Commanders did. Obviously,
no.
I'm not a Commanders fan.
Right.
But you tanked. You said, hey, we'll see.
Yeah.
You bring in Eric Bieniemy. I don't know. We'll ask Blake Lewis Jr. what he thinks about Ron Rivera and where that's going. But they're going to be, either way, they're going to be in the market for a quarterback. And you would assume that Sam Howell is done. Jacoby Brissett, who is just the world's best backup.
Yeah.
I guess not in this case. And there's just no way the Niners are going to lose this game.
There really shouldn't be. There should not be a universe in which the Niners lose this game at all. I mean, when you have a backup quarterback in for an already four-win team, I mean, this should be easy. If Sam Howell plays, it should be honestly even easier. Sam Howell leads the NFL in interceptions.
Right.
If you're going to give the Niners extra possessions and also not capitalize on possessions that you have, there's no way that you can beat this Niner team. It's just not possible.
I think the way you look at this game, if you're the Niners, is our guys.
Don't get hurt. That's how
right.
I'm looking at it.
Your guys should not be on the field when the fourth quarter clock hits zero.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah.
Go out, take care of business, and rest. We'll see some more Sam Darnold.
Need it.
About halfway through the fourth, maybe
Need
earlier
it.
Than that.
See
so,
some Ronnie Bell action, maybe.
Ronnie
you know?
Bell.
Come on.
Danny Gray.
Come
I saw
on.
His question. I forgot about Danny Gray. I saw he was on the injury list for a shoulder. And I'm same idea.
Yeah.
How, brother?
Yeah.
I didn't even remember that man was on the roster.
Yeah, I completely forgot.
My joke back in the day was that Ronnie Bell or Danny Gray does not exist without Trey Lance. Because he never caught a pass from anybody else other than Trey Lance. I thought he was in Dallas with Trey Lance. I just never seen it. So maybe some guys can get some work in against the Commanders. We will talk to Blake Lewis Jr. in a few minutes here. Let's get to some of this audio for best audio of the year.
Okay.
This is Mike Malone. Festive.
Very, very festive.
At the parade.
Is Brucey B going anywhere? Hell no. Hell no. Hell no. Hey, we running this shit back. We running this shit back. Hell yeah. Come on. Get loud. Get loud. Get loud.
There is no better vibes than parade vibes.
No.
It's so incredible. And like I hope one day we get to experience it here in Sacramento, but God bless everyone who enjoys their time on parade because, man, there is just nothing better, and you truly hear people's like ultimate level of happiness when they are in front of that microphone. And like you said, they've started to get a little bit festive.
Do you know Dave texted him during the run about what he drinks, if it's Fireball or something? Dave was texted Michael Malone during the morning show live, and because they were trying to figure out what he drinks. This was on the playoff run, so not even to that point.
Right.
So I don't think he ever got an answer. I think Malone left Dave on red.
Wow.
Love it. Pretty love good. To hear it. but that wasn't the only audio, fantastic audio that came from the Nuggets championship. Here is the saga that was Nikola Jokic trying to decide whether or not he wanted to even attend the parade.
So I'm curious what you are feeling right now and if you're looking forward to a parade coming up in Denver.
When is parade?
Thursday.
No. I need to go home. Hello. Okay.
You know that I told that I don't want to stay on parade, but I f***ing want to stay on parade. This is the best.
Love it. So good.
Yeah, this is
Change of heart.
I love it so much. Nikola Jokic, just absolutely incredible. You know, I could, you know, it's very on brand for him to not want to do the parade, though. For him to come around and say he really wants to, parade was just, it was amazing at the time. But not as amazing, if I'm going to be a little homery here. Mm-hmm. Nothing to me is as amazing as all of the clips that we heard from Sacramento Kings unanimous head coach of the year, Mike Brown, last year was just a walking soundbite. And he really set the tone from the beginning of the year with this absolute gem.
Hey, what the turn them up to death? Turn them jets on. Turn them jets on.
So good. And like the best part is the video. I mean, I don't even know if the audio fully does it justice because the first 5 seconds is him in a full blown 100% effort sprint. Mm-hmm.
Does he have on Vans while he's sprinting?
almost guaranteed to have Vans on in that moment. Just the absolute best that's ever done it. And that's Mike Brown with the Turn the Jets On. And Nate, do we have time for G-Man's call of the 16th year or the 16-year drought?
I think we should go for that. After the interview.
Okay, sounds good. Right. Yeah, so you'll hear that it. Later.
Yeah, turn the bleeping jets on. So good. There you go. Just a full sprint. And that really set the tone.
It did. It really did.
For the whole season. Got to get to a break. When we get back, Lake Lewis Jr., Commanders insider, ABC News, will join us to talk Commanders, Niners, and who the heck will be their quarterback. Not just this week, but moving forward. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.